You're listening to Music for the Mighty Mellow with DJ Frederick. It's At the Tone. From 1976, Mr. Alberto Baldan Bembo from the album Lingua d'Argento. That was a tune called Savannah. Well, this is DJ Frederick. You're listening to At the Tone here on the Global Voice at theglobalvoice.info. We explore film and television soundtracks, shortwave transmissions, obscure recordings, dusty grooves, easy jazz, and a tinge of psychedelia from the 1960s through today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining me. I hope you're enjoying the musical journey here on At the Tone. The Tonight Show's Doc Severinsen with a cover of King Crimson's The Court of the Crimson King. Before that, a band called the Ghost Funk Orchestra and a tune in honor of Isaac Hayes. Well, this is DJ Frederick. You're listening to At the Tone on just about the best internet radio station that I can think of, The Global Voice.
Now that I've reached the climax of my career, I can officially retire and go over all these tapes I managed to cull from the pile. This one has me swearing like Buddy Hackett at a Dean Martin roast. Old Hoover and I, what a fruitcake. Been there, heard that. Oh, what the hell is...
Now that's some pretty butterfly soup from the dead, man. Some groovy...
Oh, I absolutely deplore these radical, long-haired hippie extremists. I try to placate them. I got us out of Vietnam, didn't I? These drugged-out DJs with nothing better to do than make fun of me. I made it perfectly clear. I put my goddamn shoulders out of whack when I gave them their own victory peace sign gestures, right up until they helicoptered me into oblivion here in San Clemente. Although they do make a mean clam chowder at the Crab Crotch. Oh, Pat, how could you have left me? Pat, give me a pat on the back.
So your chick is split, man. That's okay. You're hip because you're listening to Chip. It's the liquid frequency test, man. With your host, Chip Colquhoun. The place is the Global Voice, and the time is every Saturday. 15 hours universal fire out.
It's our 7,000th broadcast. I'm Jim Metzner, and this is The Pulse of the Planet. In celebration and in thanks to all the organizations that have supported the program over the years, to all those who have worked behind the scenes, to the hundreds of independent producers, to the thousands of scientists and spokespersons, to our radio stations and podcast platforms, and most of all to our listeners, here's a little gift, a favorite sound. If they're handy, listen with headphones. Imagine you're in Australia, west of Melbourne, in the Grampians, a nature preserve run by indigenous peoples. It's dawn, and we're surrounded by many animals, including kangaroos. Here's a dawn chorus of mostly birds. Thanks for listening and for your continued support. Celebrating 7,000 programs, I'm Jim Metzner, and this is The Pulse of the Planet.
You're listening to The Global Voice.
Thank you.
Some music from the BBC Test Cards here on At the Tone, where I'm featuring a mix of music for libraries and lava lamps, dusty grooves, easy jazz, and a tinge of psychedelic pop from the 1960s through today.
Exploring science and the sea. Blue mussels are riding the winds across the North Sea. They're not taking up windsurfing, though. Instead, they're colonizing the bases of offshore wind turbines. Over the next couple of decades, that could boost the mussel population, with ripple effects throughout the ecosystem. The North Sea is between Great Britain and Northern Europe. Winds there are strong and steady, making it an ideal location for wind farms. At the end of 2017, in fact, it was home to about 70% of Europe's offshore wind capacity. And thousands more turbines are scheduled to be installed there. Researchers from Germany looked at what the turbines mean for life in the North Sea. They counted the blue mussels on the bases of a few current structures in the North Sea. They then calculated how many mussels would inhabit all of the planned turbines. Finally, they used models to simulate what that could mean for other life in the sea. The researchers found that the turbines could yield a population explosion for the mussels. By 2030, mussels on the turbines could equal about 40% of the seafloor population. That should attract organisms that eat mussels. And as the mussels die, their shells will pile up on the seabed, attracting bottom-dwelling organisms. The mussels will filter microscopic organisms from the water. That will leave less food for some fish and other critters. And the effects could extend hundreds of miles from the wind farms, long-ranging changes powered by the wind. Science in the Sea is a production of the University of Texas Marine Science Institute at Port Aransas and is available as a weekly podcast at scienceinthesea.org. I'm Holly Brawley. Whoa.
This is Sean Klein, regular host of Everything But the Kitchen Sink, here on the Global Voice, and on the fourth Friday of every month, I'll be bringing you Odds and Sods, a half-hour monthly show featuring interesting things and curiosities I've found on the internet, touching on a variety of subjects, from humanity's first recordings of its own voice in the 1850s, the federal government bouncing shortwave signals off the moon, an old World War II era film about the use of radio during the war, auditory illusions, alternate musical scales, what noise does an ostrich make, a dinosaur? We'll be exploring these and much more on Odds and Sods, 1730 UTC, every fourth Friday of the month, here on the Global Voice. Check the program schedule for repeats.
You're listening to the Global Voice.
And welcome back to At the Tone. I'm DJ Frederick, and you're listening to the Global Voice.
Thank you. In December, I'm headed to New York City for a few days. My primary goal is ostensibly to visit my daughter, but she long ago resigned herself to the understanding that her mother is going to be looking for, or at least noticing, the birds. This time I have a specific birding goal. While Katie's at work one day, I'll be headed to Brooklyn Bridge Park with my binoculars and camera, inspired by a book I recently read, Birding at the Bridge, In Search of Every Bird on the Brooklyn Waterfront by Heather Wolf. How could I not love a book that starts out like this? I've never been a morning person. I'm still not a morning person. You might be wondering how someone like me got into birding, a pastime that often requires waking up at the crack of dawn. Birds are the only thing, barring an emergency, that makes me rise before the sun. Once I developed this passion, the possibility of spotting an interesting species or observing a new behavior became an obsession. I said goodbye to the snooze button, end quote. Heather Wolf fell in love with birds while living in Florida's Pensacola Beach. In particular, the first bird to catch her attention enough to look it up later was a lease tern that dive-bombed her as it defended its nest. She studied up about it and found the information about its travels from South America and the Caribbean to be fascinating and became concerned about its vulnerability while nesting on beaches. When she visited New York, she picked up a copy of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology's Birder's Life List and Diary, intrigued by the very idea of keeping a list of birds. But it took her a while to get started. The first time she set out with the intention of starting her list, she did not even bring along binoculars. While standing on a boardwalk, a bluish bird with a long beak flew over, making a rattling sound. She didn't know what it was, but when she did a Google search on blue bird rattling sound, the first result was belted kingfisher. She and her boyfriend toasted the bird with a glass of wine, and that was how Heather Wolf started birding. After moving to Brooklyn in 2012, she set a goal of seeing and photographing 100 species at Brooklyn Bridge Park, started a blog about the bird she saw with photographs, and started offering bird walks. That's how her book got its start. It's organized by season, with photos, all good and some absolutely splendid, and short accounts of the birds she's seen. Her list is now up to 134. Reading the book, you get a good idea of the cool birds you're likely to see there, but you also hear Heather Wolf's voice in both her personal experiences of each bird and her explanations of its natural history. Although brief, her accounts vividly draw you into her experience. For the bufflehead, she notes, "Just as I bring the bird into focus, it propels itself up and forward for an elegant dive, one that doesn't seem possible for such a chunky duck. Down it goes, its tail feathers and outstretched fan entering the water. While I wait for the bird to surface, I imagine its hunt for a mollusk or crustacean below. What's it really like down there in the depths of the East River? Maybe I don't want to know. After 20 seconds or so, the bufflehead bobs to the surface like a rubber duck." End quote. The whole book is like that, an introduction to the wonderfully varied birds of Brooklyn Bridge Park, as told by a particularly charming young woman, each account filled with both enthusiasm and fascinating, well-researched facts. When I head to Brooklyn in December, I hope I can figure out a way to make my path cross with Heather Wolf's. But even if not, she's piqued my interest in Brooklyn Bridge Park. No matter where you live or bird, her book, Birding at the Bridge, In Search of Every Bird on the Brooklyn Waterfront, is a delightful read, and I strongly recommend it. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.
Hello, this is Gianna Saccomano from Friuli. You're listening to The Global Voice, the radio for all.
Now the dove is on the wing, and you
from 1965. That was the Wee Five with the very first version of Let's Get Together. All right, this is DJ Frederick. You're listening to At the Tone on the Global Voice. If you have any comments, questions, or inquiries, you could email me. I have two email addresses. The first is frederick@christiannewage.com. That's frederick@christiannewage, all one word, christiannewage.com. Or WSCS, as in We're Sunapee's Classical Station, WSCS@colby-sawyer.edu.